Hello, sex fans, and welcome back. Today is Monday, July 22nd, 2013, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge. And I'm your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick.
How do you do, my dear?
Hey, Margot. Listen, the award-winning filmmaker Kyle Henry is back with us today for part two of his appearance here on the Erotic Mind Show. He's here to discuss his movie, Foreplay, Tales of Sexual Intimacy. But wait, you didn't miss part one of our chat, did you? Well, not to worry if you did, because you can find it and all of my podcasts in the podcast archive on my site, drdicksexadvice.com. All you got to do is use the search function in the header, type in podcast number 382, and voila. But don't forget to use the pound sign when you do your search. And Kyle invites you to visit him on his site, foreplayfilm.com. And be sure to like his film's Facebook page, too. For your convenience, all of these links will be in today's podcast posting.
Would you really? How sweet.
It's just the kind of guy I am. So today's program is once again brought to you by Dr. Dick's how-to video library. You know, even though I get tons of email from folks looking for my advice, I can only respond to a limited number of inquiries at any given time. But that doesn't mean that I don't care about everyone who writes in. I do. That's why I've set up the how-to video library. You'll find a link to this great resource right there on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the Video Library tab in the header. The Video Library is the go-to place for all of you who have sexual performance questions. You'll be able to watch all kinds of deliciously entertaining, delightfully enriching, and oh-so informative videos right from the comfort of your own home.
What a story. Everything but the bloodhound snapping at her rear end.
Kinda. And remember, a portion of the money you spend at Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library, educating, enriching, and entertaining yourself, comes back to us as support for these marvelous shows. So knock yourself out. Okay, on with the show. Welcome back to Dr. Dick's Sex Advice. .com. Thanks for joining us for this second part of the Erotic Mind podcast featuring you. Last week we had a wonderful time getting to know one another and learning a little bit about your movie, and I'd like to pick up precisely where we left off, and that is your movie Foreplay. I'd like to ask you to walk us through each of the stories, if you would. As our audience remembers from last time, there are four stories. That's why we call it Foreplay. And I'd like you to tell us how you came to choose these four stories, and were there any particular challenges that you faced as you directed each of them? So your first story is set in Skokie, Illinois. A closeted woman's crush on her minister's wife erupts during a weekend of dog sitting.
Yeah, so that was written by Jessica Hedrick, and she pitched the idea of, you know, sex, part of sex is unleashing the animal within. Mm-hmm. And I think the big taboo with bestiality is there's always been this classification and separation between human versus animal.
Right.
And, like, we're not animals, especially, I just heard this episode on some NPR show talking about bestiality and about how Americans used to punish bestiality with the death penalty.
Yeah.
In New England. Yeah. And how...
And the animal had to be killed, too.
And the animal had to be killed. It was like, because they...
What?
Because the animal seduced you, don't you know?
Oh,
like,
right,
the,
exactly.
Because the whole puritanical notion that animals were always lascivious,
yes,
and, you know,
right.
They have sex right there in the yard while you're watching.
Yeah.
That's terrible. So she wanted us to put together a sympathetic bestiality story. You know, like, how could she imagine something like this would occur, or what situation would it occur in? with a woman, and she also had a background in her church. She was in her church choir when she was growing up, and thought up the situation where the dog sort of unleashes the desire that this woman has for her minister's wife. Wow. You know, it's somewhat of a sublimation, and the dog is a little bit of a matchmaker.
Mm-hmm. It's true. It's just a sweet story. Absolutely sweet, sweet story. It's just really charming. I'm a dog lover myself, not in the literal sense of that word, but I thought it was absolutely wonderful. And you know, I was a Catholic priest for 20 years, so I understand the whole churchy aspect to it too. So,
yeah, I didn't know that you were.
Showstopper. We can talk about it at some time.
Oh yeah, we need to talk about sometime about Aldous Huxley's The Devils. But it's interesting that connection between the sacred and the erotic.
Exactly.
Too. Like, I directed a documentary. I edited a documentary called Audience of One about a Pentecostal minister in San Francisco who convinces his congregation to kind of go on this boondoggle to make a science fiction film. But it was so fascinating. Like, those services, those Pentecostal services, reverence, like speaking in tongues and dancing around, and the women are offering themselves to Jesus over and over and over again. It was like, wow, this is orgiastic.
Clothes on,
mm-hmm. but everything but tongue, you know, is right there.
It's true enough. It's
pretty amazing.
And it's orgasmic, you know. I mean, I've know enough about organized religion to know that, you know, religious ecstasy and sexual ecstasy are basically one and the same thing.
It's powerful. Well, it's in the mind again, too.
Exactly, you know? That.
It's exactly, powerful.
Yeah. And the ideal lover. I mean, you can't get any better than Jesus, don't you know?
Oh, no.
So your second,
don't even dare suggest it.
Really? Unless you find a really cute puppy. So the second story is set in Austin, Texas, your hometown. A young couple discovers a kinky way to keep their relationship alive.
Yeah, that was inspired by Carlos and I had a lot of friends who were having babies, and often the circumstances under which conception occur are never shared with the child, mm-hmm. never shared with friends, mm-hmm. and it's not always planned. Mm-hmm. Or it's not planned with the head. You know, sometimes it's planned with the heart and with other things in mind. We also wanted a conception story that was ambiguous. Like, is this such a good idea that this couple is having a baby? Because, you know, every mainstream story that we see about conception is like, oh my God, having a baby is the most amazing thing. Of course you should have a baby. A baby's going to complete your life. Baby, 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 baby. Sometimes maybe it's not such a good idea. I know it's sacrilegious, but yes.
Right. It's true enough.
And, you know, we wanted them also to do role playing. You know, I think there's something about sex that it's not always personal. Sometimes it's archetypal, mm-hmm. and sometimes what people are looking for is the interaction with the mystery and the unknown. And how do people deal with that inside a relationship where it oftentimes can be hard to escape the personal aspect.
Right.
You know.
Right. And there's the whole the pursuit that I thought was just a fabulous little effort in that movie.
Yes, with the Wagner. now we was it into the misty twilight. It's from the opera, but the kind of entering into the dark forbidden space. There's a porn arcade. I'm blowing it for people, but they have sex in a porn arcade.
I was going to say really kinky, but, you know, comparatively speaking to your other stories, not so much.
Well, we didn't want to give again, we're trying to violate mainstream films, right. So, you know, we it's our token straight film.
Right. So your third story is set in Tampa, Florida. A man with an extremely small penis finds his nirvana in a public bathroom. The segment was roll on the floor funny. And there's some amazing physical comedy in this story. How did you do that?
Well, very, very carefully. you know, the story was inspired by a Tom of Finland cartoon. Carlos.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Carlos had gotten as a gift a compilation of Tom of Finland cartoons, and looking through the material, he had this particular story where there was like a gangbang in a bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Tom, God bless him, but he can only draw the same body and the same face. You know, it doesn't matter.
He colored the hair different.
The hair is different, yeah, sometimes. And we thought, well, Carlos thought, well, wouldn't it be fun if these were all normal people? Like, if it wasn't a Tom of Finland, and it wasn't about the motorcycle stud, it was about the guy with the real problems, you know, who would have real problems, especially in a public pickup sex place, a tea room,
right.
as they're referred to.
Uh-huh.
And it just became naturally a slapstick comedy. Yes, and many, many prosthetic penises are used. There are some real ones in that one, but it was a real tough time for our art department, like finding the prosthetic that would match the body and would match
or
the
not,
coloration.
You know, or not match. That would
be oh, yeah. Exactly.
I love it. It was really, and the funny thing is the hero is, you know, the fellow with the small penis,
yeah.
and you know, at the beginning, he's kind of shamed into it, but at the end, he, you know, he's the big winner. So it's absolutely stunning. You know, really flies in the face of what the popular culture thinks is attractive and worthwhile in terms of sexuality and stuff like that. It's great stuff.
Well, I'm sure you know this too, but what looks pretty to the eyes,
yes,
often does not deliver
yeah.
what. The heart wants
right.
and needs.
That's
and I'm shocked by, you know, back in my earlier days, my wild days, but how often the case where someone puts the emphasis. Now, this is, the stereotype could be reversed too.
Sure.
Plenty of,
absolutely.
You know, people who, but we put such value on the surface, especially through our visual imagery, like, you know, that none of us can live up to that. It's ridiculous, but we're shamed by all of that, too, to buy junk all the time. I mean.
Exactly. I mean, if I had a nickel for every time somebody wrote into me and asked, how do I grow my dick bigger, you know, I'd be wealthy. I wouldn't have to do this. Interview shit, don't you know?
Not the size of the boat, it's the motion of the ocean, can I tell you?
And I always say, you know, after a mouthful, the rest is wasted, so there you have it. Anyhow,
yeah.
Finally, your fourth story is set in San Francisco. A cross-dressing sex worker faces a challenging assignment with a quadriplegic man. That just blew me away.
That was the story that really inspired us to make the whole quadrilogy.
Is that right? So that one was the first?
That was the first one that
no
was
kidding.
Shot.
Oh, wow.
No. And that actually, the connection was made to, I could probably say, like the top cross-dressing sex worker in San Francisco, who also turned out to be an old college friend of Jessica Hedrick, the screenwriter Skokie. And I had gone to San Francisco to edit a film, and Jessica said, oh, you should meet Chloe. Is the name
right.
that he goes by. He's a real cinephile, you know, he, you know, is a former women's studies major, like he's just a real great person to get to know. Met him, was a little bit scared, you know, when I heard that he was a sex worker and that he was a cross-dressing sex worker. He has so many amazing stories.
Oh,
he was so down to earth, so it completely dispelled many of the notions that I had. I mean, many of the notions are true, that many people are driven to sex work, you know, for
yep.
beyond their choice and by economic circumstances, but he had created a life for himself where, at least for him, this was a calling.
Absolutely.
This was something that he was good at, that he really felt that he had made a difference in the lives of others, and it should be valued as work. It was work, and one should get paid for one's labors, right. And it's really odd that we stigmatize this instead of, let's say, concentrating on unionization, maybe,
right.
of sex workers,
right.
you know, or legalizing so that those who do sex work could actually get the police involved if they're abused,
yes.
or beat up,
right.
or, you know,
right.
by driving it underground, again, we create many of the conditions for exploitation to occur.
Well, you know, it gets us back to what we were talking about last week about, you know, our culture here in America in particular about sex and what is proper and what cannot be done. And one of the things you cannot do is sell it. And we can sell everything else. We can be the most monstrous, horrible, nightmarish person. But as long as we don't sell sex, it's okie dokie. And
we can use sex to sell other stuff.
Exactly that. But it can't be firsthand, so to speak,
no.
as it were. Interesting.
No.
What do you think? I loved each of your stories. The last story was my favorite. It was so beautifully done, so tender and compassionate, and yet it was hot as hell. And the topic of sex and disability is a hot-button issue for most people because, you know, disabled people or ugly people or fat people or old people can't have sex because that's only reserved for, you know, wealthy and or middle class and white and healthy mm-hmm. and young and all that kind of stuff. And I know this stuff firsthand because in my book, The Amateur's Guide to Death and Dying, I put a whole chapter about sex and intimacy concerns for sick, elder, and dying people. And so I was so delighted to see that segment in your movie.
Well, it was one of Chloe's most moving stories. And we actually adapted it from a story where she had a session with a quadriplegic young man
mm-hmm.
that was arranged by his mother.
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted that sense still of a partnership, a relationship where someone was totally dependent on someone else. In this case, a husband who's a quadriplegic who's dependent upon his wife, who has to ask for this.
Yes.
And that it's actually honored by her.
Yes, she has to grant the...
She has to grant it. There's three people who are having an intimate encounter
yes.
here, not
yes,
one.
Yes, yes, yes. Absolutely. And Chloe having to figure out what turned this man's crank, so to speak,
yeah.
without him giving any verbal cues or body cues, for that matter.
Yeah,
it's
all I can do is blink. You know, all I can do is blink. The actors are amazing. Again, this is where casting is key. Gary Chasen and Paul Swallow. Paul, who blossomed like a butterfly, if I could say this, in front of the camera on this one. He's also known as a performer. His goes by the name Christine, Christeene.
Mm-hmm.
He just got through coming back from a tour in Europe. Him and Gary were really able to connect.
Mm-hmm.
And both of them were doing things for the first time. This is their first sex scene. Both of them, for Gary, it was the first kind of sex scene that he had with a man. His first queer kiss on screen.
Yes.
And so I think everyone, and it was the first sex scene I had directed, so I think
wow.
everyone was having to associate these new things.
Mm-hmm.
And just to say, one thing I learned the most about this was how to work with actors when directing sex scenes.
Oh.
That, you know, it's creating the space, but it's trusting that when the camera's on, they're going to do their work.
Mm-hmm.
It's creating rules so that no one feels exploited,
yes.
That they feel safe, but also really working out the mechanics. Who touches who, when, where,
mm-hmm.
you know. There's not a lot of improv-ing that's going on, even though it seems improvised.
Yes.
Because both people have to know exactly what's being done so that they can artificially inhabit, you know, the moment. And
right.
and maybe they're really having a connection, maybe not, but they have to project that they're having that intimate connection.
Right. You know, I used to shoot porn, gay porn, interestingly enough, way back.
You've had a busy life.
Catholic priest and pornographer and writer of children's stories. So, anyhow, and...
You put my hybrid in to shame. I feel like I'm a narrow bandwidth, like one color.
but that was the thing that, you know... there was actually a story behind it. Well, I'll save for another time. But to get what I was looking for in the products that I wanted to produce, I didn't want to do cookie cutter stuff. I didn't want to do mainstream stuff. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, and so it was all dependent on, you know, the connection, the chemistry between people. And it was all improvised because it was actual sex between actual people. And, I mean, that's the nature of porn, as opposed to what you were doing is it's erotica and different concept altogether. But I was only successful if the people who were performing had chemistry. And I wanted to capture the whole body kind of thing, which you really did. I mean, you captured, you know, like the orgasm in the face, as opposed to, you know, orgasms, you know, shooting out a dick or something like that. And so it was a fascinating kind of thing. But my projects, my movies, people were just going like, oh, but wait a minute, you know, you don't have enough. You don't have enough ejaculations per 20 minutes. And I'm going, yeah, but look at the face and look at the body and look at the secondary, you know, sexual response in the body of curling toes and, you know, ecstasy in the face, you know, boring.
Again, it's different uses, you know, because, again, pornography is used to, you know, even the way everyone has to turn their bodies kind of in porn to the camera, you know, that you can see things. I mean, that happens in film too. It's like you're cheating your body in ways.
Right.
It's there for different uses. That's why I really like, again, this filmmaker Travis Matthews. Check out one of his films. Interior Leather Bar has this scene where two actors talk about before they're going to perform a sex scene for the first time in front of camera. And it's fully explicit and it's porn, like they're actually having the sex, and they have the sex, and they all focus on the cast and the crew watching them as much as the act, and then afterwards they interview the guys about the experience. It's the first time. It's really interesting how it's both things at once. You know, it's very hard to separate the two.
Right. And interestingly enough, it's very hard work. I mean, sex on camera is very hard work.
Yeah.
And I applaud anybody who can do that. And crewing on, you know, a movie that it contains sexual content is also extremely difficult. And not everyone can do it. Certainly not everyone who aspires to do it. I found that out. So there you go. So I suspect that directing foreplay was more challenging than filming a full-length movie that contained only one story. Did you choose this project because it would showcase your virtuosity?
I was hoping. I it's in the eye of the beholder, but I definitely wanted a challenge for me. You're not a filmmaker unless you're making films. And after my first feature, I went through the normal development hell process of trying to get another script off the ground and waiting for other people to give me their approval.
Uh-huh.
And at a certain point, I figured out, you know what? I need to keep making work. And shorts are the laboratory of cinema.
Yeah.
They're a chance for you to try things out in a less risky fashion.
Right.
But I wanted to up the risks. I certainly didn't want this to be ignored, and I wanted it to be something that you had to have an opinion about. You know, like it, hate it, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You weren't going to walk away from it just thinking, well, hopefully not, you know. Hopefully
definitely not. You know, when I did that I mentioned this last week when we began our conversation, that you had asked me to sit on a panel of sexperts when your movie premiered here in the Emerald City, and I was astonished by the reaction of the audience, not only while the thing was playing, but afterwards, you know, how it reverberated with them, and some of them found it very difficult to talk about what they had just seen because it was so moving to them. And I just thought that was, you did what you started out to do, I'm guessing.
Well, thank you. I hope so. I mean, this takes so much effort and time. It's hard to imagine approaching a subject like this. And again, wanting to try to inject some honesty and not go for broke,
right.
You know?
Right. Yeah. So defining erotic art is difficult, since perceptions about what is erotic and what is art fluctuate with time and by culture. For example, the depiction of a phallus in some cultures is, in some periods of human history, is not erotic, but rather a powerful symbol of fertility. So what makes a movie erotic, from your point of view?
I don't know. Perhaps it's
next guest, please.
I say I don't know because I don't want to separate the erotic into like some ghetto,
right?
From
good.
The rest of a cinema. You know, cinema is there to move and transport us and show us something about ourselves or the world around us in a safe way. You know, whether it's the most horrific thing you've ever experienced, you're still in a movie theater or you're still at home on your TV, you know, watching it. Erotica often can literally show that the world of sex is not frightening. It can show mechanics, you know. It can show it could help one determine what one considers sexy,
right.
You know, before one even goes out into the world to find that. I remember, you know, growing up and as a young teenager, you know, other teenage boys, you know, would, of course, you know, try to find porn magazines or, like, somebody in their parents' house would find some sort of stash or something, and, you know, people would start looking at it. And, you know, you kind of start figuring things out, you know? And I think if you have to only do that with other people, or if your proclivities are so, what you consider so unique, and you see a representation of it, and you're like, oh, this exists within the world.
Finally.
And it's not just,
finally.
And it's not just in my head, or, you know, my goodness, we looked at a lot of Japanese, I'm forgetting what it's called, but it's erotic art throughout the ages to do our opening credit design. And my lord, like, the level of sophistication in the erotica that goes back, you know, to 1000, you know, what was the Middle Ages in Europe, and the need to classify and sort and categorize and show it all is fascinating. And that is not culturally Western Europe, you know.
Right.
So it is very specific. I think what separates maybe erotica from pornography is that erotica is not solely concerned with getting its viewer off, with delivering the product. You know, whereas pornography is required to deliver the orgasm.
So
for the
now
viewer.
They tell me.
If only somebody had just laid it on the line.
Really? What was wrong with me? Holy cow.
You know, so that's what it's there for. I mean, as far as I can determine. Whereas erotica might excite or titillate, but normally there's other things going on in the work that is connecting. And so some work that is can be pornographic and erotic, or some, you know, narrative pornographic erotica, you know.
Yeah. Exactly. Our time is running out here, and I had again, I have tons and tons of questions, but let me skip to the end of my questions here. What do you look for in the erotic art of others?
For me, I don't know if I'm looking... I'm looking for truth.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking for human connection. I'm looking for also sometimes a connection of like, what is making this person tick? Like,
wow.
A mystery is fine, you know? We've seen some crazy things. You're like, really? What is going on there? Like, wow, who is that person? For me as a filmmaker, or as somebody who creates stories, I'm looking for it to have a real narrative function. Again, I love the films of filmmaker Ken Russell or Nicholas Rogue. He did
right,
a film,
right.
Don't Look Now, with Julie Christie and Donald Sutherland, that has one of the hottest like screen sex scenes ever between a couple who has just lost their child and they've gone to Venice and they haven't had sex in a really long time, and they have this sex scene in this hotel room, and it's intercut with them getting dressed after they've had sex. And it's so much about that way that if you're in a long-term relationship, sex waxes and wanes, and it could become a way of like reconnecting after you've forgotten each other over a period of time. I loved that, and I was like, that represents an emotional state and a moment in my life that I can really connect with. So if they could do both in erotica, wow, then you're on to something.
Right. So what does the future hold for you and your work?
I'm on to, you know, as Monty Python would say, a knell for something completely. I hope to produce a biopic about the American poet Emily Dickinson.
No kidding, how grand.
If one would hope. we need the budget.
Right.
But about a period in her life right before she sort of began writing in earnest, where we suppose a relationship that she has with another woman who
yes.
was very close to her.
Yes.
I'm also doing a short doc on forgotten war memorials.
Oh, how interesting.
So again, you know, just trying to keep it real, keep it different.
Really? Well, it's been so wonderful getting to know you. What a treat. I wasn't able to meet you when you were here with your movie, and we had that difficulty of, you know, when was the panel of sexperts going to happen. And so I'm so glad that we got this opportunity to meet and chat. I'm enriched completely. Before we go, could you give us your website address again? Tell us where and how we can buy your movie, either hard copy or streaming.
Sure. It's available. I think the easiest way is to go to www.foreplayfilm.com, and you'll see a link for DVD or streaming. You can buy the DVD from me. We can stream the film on TLA Releasing's website. That's T, like, Tender Lovin', I don't know. Apple, I don't know.
You are a pervert. I like that about you.
Well, that was just for mocking. That was terrible. But... it's available on TLA for streaming.
And I'll have links to all of this in today's podcast posting, along with your links to both your your Facebook pages. Good. Well, thank you again, Kyle. I appreciate it. It's been a joy, and I hope that we have opportunities to chat again in the future.
Thank you, Dick.
Thanks. Bye now. What a great show. Huh. Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next week on Wednesday for a new edition of the Sex Wisdom Show with an amazing guest and more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. And I hope that you saw the announcement I made on drdicksexadvice.com late last week that my latest book, The Gospel of Kink, is now available for purchase through Amazon and through all the best bookstores. Be sure to ask for it by name.
I'll never forget this night as long as I live. And I'll never forget you for making it possible.
Oh, shucks, honey. It's no big thing. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library. Listen up, buckaroos. Thanks to this amazing technology, you'll be able to watch your choice of smut from the comfort of your own home. With just a little prompting from you, they're going to come gushing out of your computer like nobody's business. Check it out. You'll find a link to this fabulous sex resource right there on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the tab that reads Video on Demand. There is no membership fee. This is a pay-per-minute sort of deal. So your pay-per-view minutes allow you to watch whatever content you want for whatever length of time you choose. Pretty gall darn sweet, huh? And remember, a portion of the money you spend at Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library, educating, enriching, and entertaining yourself, comes back to us as support for these marvelous shows. So knock yourself out.
Good night, Margot. I'll call you tomorrow.
All right. So, until next week, remember, sex is good. And good sex? Well, that's even better. Over and out.